Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, The Appearance of the Demon Vritrasura, text number 43. Translation. Dear Lord, your omniscience, and you are omniscient, and therefore you know very well why we have taken shelter at your lotus feet, would provide shade that gives relief from all material disturbances. Since you are the Supreme Spiritual Master, and you know everything, we have sought shelter of your lotus feet for instruction. Please give us relief by counteracting our present distress. Your lotus feet are the only shelter for a fully surrendered devotee and are the only means for subduing all the tribulations of this material world. Purport. One need only seek shelter of the shade of the Lord's lotus feet. Then all material tribulations that disturb him will be subdued. Just as one comes under the shadow of a big tree, the disturbances caused by the heat of the scorching sun are immediately mitigated without one's asking for relief. Therefore, the whole concern of the conditioned soul should be the lotus feet of the Lord. The conditioned soul suffering from various tribulations because of existing in this material world can be relieved only when he seeks shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Next verse says, semi-dear, so we'll read that also. Therefore, O Lord, O Supreme Controller, O Lord Krishna, please annihilate this dangerous demon, Vritrasura, Tvasa's son, who has already swallowed all our weapons, our paraphernalia for fighting, and our strength and influence. Purport, the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, 7:15-16, Namam diskritino muda pravadyante naradama maya apritigyanam asrim bhavam ashitya chaturvida vidante mam janasikritina arjana arte jignasi artarati gyani cha varatar shiva. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and a partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. O best among the Bharatas, Arjuna. Four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me: the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Four classes of neophyte devotees who approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead to offer devotional service because of material motives are not pure devotees. But the advantage of such materialistic devotees is that they sometimes give up their material desires and become pure. When the demigods are utterly helpless, they approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead in grief and with tears in their eyes, praying to the Lord. And thus they become almost pure devotees, free from material desires. Admitting that they have forgotten pure devotional service because of extensive material opportunities, they surrender to the Lord, leaving to his consideration whether to maintain them or to annihilate them. Such surrender is necessary. Bhaktivinoda Kaur sings, Marabi Rakibe Yo Icha Dohara. O Lord, I fully surrender unto your lotus feet. Now as you desire, you may protect me or annihilate me. You have the full right to do either. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Naiva kinchit kuromiti yuktamanite tatvavet pashan srinvan srishandri gran ashnanga chan sapan svasan palapan vishvijangrinan umishani mishanapi indriyarandiyarte shu vartanta iti dharina. The person who is in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing and hearing and touching, engaged in breathing and dreaming, always knows within himself that he does nothing at all. Because, well, speaking and evacuating and receiving and opening and closing his eyes, he knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. The material world exists as a dream for the soul, but it's a dream created by Krishna. So he makes the best dreams, virtual reality. We actually believe, just like when one is sleeping at night, when they perceive a tiger is biting one and crying out for help. But when one wakes up, one realizes there was no tiger. It was part of the dream. Similarly, this material existence is a dream for the soul created by Lord Krishna to fulfill desires of sense gratification. But when the soul wakes up, then the soul understands that the material world ultimately cannot affect us. We can perceive it, and we experience the material world in terms of happiness and distress, a variety of combinations. But ultimately, we're not being directly affected by it. Simply, our consciousness is perceiving, and therefore we're experiencing, but we're not changing. And we wake up, and if we transfer our consciousness to the spiritual consciousness, then we're not even aware of the material consciousness anymore. Just like if you become distracted by something, say you have a very bad toothache, but there's a very interesting television program, and when you're watching the television program, you forget that you had a toothache after some time. And then when the television program is over, then you become conscious of your toothache again and you're in pain. So we can put our consciousness either on Krishna to different degrees. Of course, when we try to put our consciousness on Krishna, we may not be so qualified as to become fully distracted from our present material experience. But that's a question of purification and concentration. Srila Prabhupada, being perfectly situated in transcendence, could sometimes act as a normal conditioned soul, and sometimes he could be completely aloof from his bodily situation. At the end of his manifest appearance in his body, then Prabhupada was practically reduced to skin and bones, and the Ayurvedic doctor said, normally such a person would be constantly in pain because the nerves are always in being impacted by the direct contact with the different elements of the body. But Prabhupada was practically aloof from this because his mind was concentrated in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, one's spiritual advancement can also be judged by how tolerant one can be due to one's absorption in Krishna consciousness. One of the sages of got together with Bhrigu Muni, trying to discover who the Supreme was. They elected Bhrigu Muni to go and test the different personalities in the universe to see who is actually the Supreme. Therefore, they were considered Brahma Vadinam. They didn't have experience of who actually the Supreme Person was. So the first demigod Bhrigu Muni visited was his father, Lord Brahma. And when he came to Lord Brahma's planet of Brahmaloka, his father Brahma came to greet him, and Bhrigu Muni refused to, actually, within his mind, he disrespected Lord Brahma by not offering any obeisances to him. So Brahma, seeing his son was being disrespectful, became very angry and was about to curse Bhrigu Muni. But due to Brahma's great intelligence, he controlled his anger, just like fire is sometimes put out by water. And therefore Bhrigu Muni took off before Brahma changed his mind and actually cursed him. Next he visited his brother in Kailas, Lord Shiva, who came to greet Bhrigu Muni when he arrived, to embrace him. And Bhrigu Muni said, stop, don't touch me. You're dirty. You're covered with ashes. Your associates are all ghostly haunted. Don't touch me. I don't want to become contaminated by you. Lord Shiva became insulted. And not only was he about to curse Bhrigu Muni, but he took up his trident and he was about to kill Bhrigu Muni with his trident. But Parvati interfered and paid dandavats in front of the lotus feet of Lord Shiva and begged for Bhrigu Muni's life. So Lord Shiva, being influenced by his wife Parvati, gave up his anger, and again Bhrigu Muni left. This time he visited Lord Vishnu in Swetadweep, in the ocean of milk. And there he entered into Lord Vishnu's palace without any introduction, immediately went over to Lord Vishnu, who was sitting on the couch being massaged his lotus feet by Lakshmi Devi, and went up to Lord Vishnu and kicked him in the chest. And this is the greatest offense. It's offensive to not pay respects to a senior, a more advanced devotee. And it's even a greater offense to verbally criticize a devotee. But the superlative offense is to do bodily harm to a devotee. And what to speak of a devotee to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, kicking Lord Vishnu in the chest is a superlative offense. But Lord Vishnu, instead of becoming dissatisfied or angry, got off his bed and asked Bhrigu Muni for forgiveness, that he didn't notice that this Brahmin had entered into his house, and therefore he didn't properly greet him. So he asked Bhrigu Muni to please forgive him. And then he sat Bhrigu Muni on his bed and started to massage his lotus feet, saying, "My dear Bhrigu Muni, I know my chest is hard like a thunderbolt and your foot is as soft as a lotus flower petal. Therefore, I hope that my hard chest has not harmed your soft lotus feet. Let me massage it." "My dear Bhrigu Muni, I am so fortunate you've come to my Vaikuntha planet. Now that you've touched your lotus foot to my chest, I'm sure the goddess of fortune, who is generally Chanchala, who goes here and there all the time, will be happy to stay on my chest and not travel so much. Please stay here, O great Brahmin, and by your presence purify my Vaikuntha planet." So Bhrigu Muni understood Lord Vishnu's position, he understood his position, and tears came from his eyes. He was completely overwhelmed. And he left and went back to the sages to inform them that actually Lord Brahma, under little influence, little agitation, became disturbed. And Lord Shiva, a little bit more provocation, caused some disturbance. But Lord Vishnu, in spite of the greatest provocation, not only was undisturbed, but was showed unlimited devotion for his devotees. Therefore, it was concluded by the sages that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he's situated in a completely different realm of consciousness. Similarly, a great devotee, he comes up to the stage of Sundarananda Vishape Atma, which means the happiness one feels when one is actually situated in Prema Bhakti is so great that one is not even cannot even perceive material existence anymore. When Srila Prabhupada came to Vrindavan in 1974, because everyone in the movement was told that they were going to open the Krishna Balaram temple that year. The architect Sarabi and Gurudas was constantly inquiring about what is the state of preparedness to open the temple. So the devotees, these leaders, didn't want to disturb Prabhupada. They wanted to encourage him. So they kept on saying, "Oh, it's almost ready, Prabhupada. It's just about done." And so Prabhupada invited the Prime Minister of India, the chief ministers of Uttar Pradesh. He invited all the devotees from all around the world to come to India for Gaur Purnima in 1974 and open the temple. actually 75. So I bought my ticket to go to the temple. I was the temple president. And then Prabhupada arrived in January of 75, I believe, to see how the temple was almost complete. And when he got there, it was just a construction site. There was nothing at all finished. Just bags of cement everywhere. And his house was somewhat partially completed. And that was it. So Prabhupada became furious and started to yell at all the different the leaders, how can you have done this? I've invited all these important personalities, you know, et cetera, et cetera. This went on for some time. No one could even look at Prabhupada because he appeared to be like Yamaraj. They were afraid they'd be burnt if they even saw him. Finally, after some time, Prabhupada went to sit in his house that was partially completed. And the devotees were afraid, just like they were afraid to approach Lord Nrisimhadev. They were afraid of what would happen if they approached Prabhupada at this time. But one devotee went in to tell Prabhupada something. Prabhupada was completely calm. So the devotee was quite amazed that how one moment Prabhupada was so seemed to be so disturbed, and the next moment he was completely transcendental to what was going on. So he inquired from Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, yes. Just like if you're an ocean, on the surface there are so many waves, there's so many cyclones, there's so much wind going on, and seemingly so much disturbance. But when you go deep into the ocean, everything is very calm. So if you're a devotee who actually resides in his consciousness, deep within the ocean of Krishna consciousness, although externally sometimes he may manifest things on the surface, but actually deep inside he's undisturbed. Now that may seem inconceivable to us because we're actually identifying ourselves with the modes of material nature. And therefore, we believe that actually what's happening externally to us is actually happening to us. Well, actually, it's not happening to us. It's happening to the material body that we're in. And, of course, we may wind up, if we're identifying ourselves with the gross and subtle bodies, to experience whatever they're going through. Or if we identify ourselves with Krishna, then to the extent that we're able to absorb our consciousness in Krishna, to that extent, we're not going to be affected by the external material circumstances that we find ourselves in. Therefore, the devotees, when they're in great difficulty and take shelter of Krishna, then the result is that gradually they realize that they're really not in difficulty because they're spiritual beings. And if they take shelter of Krishna, that in itself ends all the difficulty. The material body is destined to problems. There's no way around it. No one lives forever in their body. Therefore, birth, death, old age, and disease are inevitable. But if the soul becomes Krishna conscious, fully Krishna conscious, then he will not be affected by these temporary affairs of the material world. But if one has plans to be happy in this material world, one has plans to enjoy this material energy through one's gross and subtle bodies, then one has to take the consequences of experiencing the gross and subtle material body and becoming distracted from, or having not being able to concentrate the mind perfectly on Krishna, and therefore not experience Krishna's presence in the presence of his devotees, and become aloof from the gross and subtle material existence. Therefore, sometimes difficulty is good because if it forces us to actually concentrate on Krishna, then in that concentration, we might be able to get the higher taste and become aware of the fact that we're actually not implicated in material existence. We're simply forgetful of Krishna. That's our only real problem. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
So how was then Krishna Bharata temple when the guests came? Was it finished?
No. Prabhupada had to call off everything. It wasn't until Ram Navami that year that they actually had the installation. So probably, I think it was held off until like Kartik or something, the installation. No, of course, he wasn't going to invite the chief minister of Uttar Pradesh to come and look at some sacks of concrete. But they hurried up their progress on the temple after Prabhupada, as they say, gave them the sauce. Yes?
There's so much written about lotus feet. Why feet?
Well, because the feet, Krishna's feet, are on Goloka Vrindavan, which is in the form of a lotus petal, flower. Therefore, it's considered to be lotus feet because they're on the lotus flower.
What kinds of devotees, they are attracted to the feet? No.
Service. Everything begins with service. We can't even approach Krishna unless there's pure devotional service. So service begins from the feet. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.